C2A. Number 17B.
So we read the text, and the text of Love a Soul is now unfolded again in the word order, starting out with mind, and we see that in the text. So naturally, most of the text is about love and soul, and here and there, then, the main point comes quickly in, which says, this is mind. Jesus experienced few of the pleasures of the physical senses. You hear at once that it has to do with soul, that we are under the subject of soul, physical senses. But his suffering, again the counterfeit of soul, were the fruits of other people's sin. Again, you have sin, counterfeit of soul, not his own. So that whole sentence is just again the counterfeit of soul. Now comes the fact about soul, the eternal Christ, his spiritual selfhood. Now, after having depicted Jesus, Mrs. Eddy depicts the Christ that Jesus embodied. That Christ, his spiritual selfhood, can you see soul, never suffered. Never suffered soul. Yes? So the Christ, the spiritual selfhood within us, never suffers. If he goes through suffering, it's only the body that suffered, it's perhaps our mentality that suffered, it's perhaps our psyche that suffered, but our true spiritual selfhood cannot suffer. It remains untouched. What is untouched? Soul, huh? Jesus mapped out the path for others. Now you get the point of mind, huh? Again, mind is that which leads and guides and steers. So he unveiled the Jesus mapped out the path, the course. Can you see again, as we had in the main tone of soulless mind, where we had the timetable and the course we had to take and traveling and so on, it repeats itself just on a higher level. He unveiled, well, mind unveils, because mind is the light that comes and sheds light into a situation. He unveiled the Christ, namely the spiritual idea of divine love. And you have again the main tone of love that says love has a divine idea. And that divine idea, which is the idea of salvation, has to be unveiled, mind. Because only when it's unveiled, it can really map out for us the way, the course. We can see where we are going, and we are awakened to that course. So to those buried in the belief of sin and self. Can you see in the belief, the counterfeit of mind, before we had unveiled, and that gives clarity, but a belief is always dark, it's always not clear. To those buried in the belief of sin and self, the counterfeit of soul, sin and self, living only for the pleasures of the gratification of the senses, counterfeit of soul. He said in substance, what? Having eyes, ye see not. See, having eyes, the spiritual senses, ye see not. You have no mind which sees. And having ears, ye hear not. We know that mind is the all-seeing, the all-hearing mind. But if that is buried in the senses, in sin, self, and pleasures of gratitude, we can no more see. Only the soul senses as mind see and hear. Yet ye should understand, lest ye should understand and be converted. Converted, soul converts, soul transforms, soul reforms, soul exchanges, always translates. And I might heal you. More or less saying, well, I can heal you if within yourself there is a spiritual sense that is awake to the divine mind and can see what the divine mind has in store of him. So there must be that readiness to be healed. He taught that the material senses, counterfeit of soul, shut out truth and its healing power. That's the tone of mind. Can you see the tone of mind, which just shows that Christ is the spiritual idea of love? That idea is unveiling to us, so that the mind is leading us and stirring us and guiding us and putting us on the right course, and then we begin to see and to hear. But if we are engulfed in the opposite of soul, in sin, self, and the testimony of the physical senses, then we cannot hear and we cannot be healed. We come to the next subtone of spirit. We will see a touch of spirit in it. She says here, meekly. What is meekly? Blessed are the meek, is the third beatitude. You see, if you know those Bible teaching well enough, we can decode already about 20% or 30% of the textbook. Those tones reappear and reappear and reappear. Meekly, our master met the mockery. What is the mockery? The counterfeit of soul, of the balm of soul. It's the mockery, it's the animal magnetism, the malicious animal magnetism, of his unrecognized grandeur. Can you see a tone of love, the grandeur of love, that cannot be recognized? Such indignities, what are indignities? What are mockery? Still the counterfeit of soul. Such indignities as he received, his followers will endure until Christianity's last triumph. You see, they can endure because soul is that which can endure, soul is that which perseveres, that can be, that is a sticker that goes right through. So it shows that if we have a sense of love as soul, then we can endure until the last triumph, until love fulfills itself. He won eternal honors. Again, you have the reward of love. He overcame. How? What? He overcame. Now you get the touch of spirit entering in. Namely, he did all that by overcoming the world, the flesh, and all error, thus proving their nothingness. Can you see now the tone of spirit entering in and says, this has to do with overcoming the world and the flesh. He wrote a full salvation. Can you hear love? The full salvation from what? From sin? From sin, sickness and death. We need Christ and him crucified. See, crucified is a counterfeit of soul, it's a counterfeit of resurrection. We must have trials and self-denials, again the sense of soul, the counterfeit of soul, as well as joys and victories until all error is destroyed. So the main tone is constantly, as you see, love as soul. Love a soul, constantly love a soul, constantly saying, well, love can save you. Love is the salvation and can save you through soul in spite of the counterfeit of soul, in spite of mockeries and indignities, because it saves you from sin, and it does it through your self-denials and through Christ and him crucified, rejecting really error, so that you can do. The little tone of spirit came in and said, that demands that you overcome the world and the flesh. That's what you have to do. You can't take along the material sense of things. We go on to the little subtone of soul. Still always under the big tone of lover soul, the educator believes that soul is in the body. So it's quite clear that we are still in the main subject of soul, that is not in the body, causes mortal to regard death as a friend, as a stepping stone out of mortality into immortality and bliss. Soul is immortality, soul is bliss, and so that transition that soul makes from sense to soul, from mortality to immortality, is only possible when we have the true sense of soul first, that soul never is in body, that soul is always outside of body. Then we can have the salvation from the body. So the Bible calls death an enemy, and Jesus overcame death and the grave instead of yielding to them. So he really considered soul as not in the body. He was the way. To him, therefore, death was not a threshold over which he must pass into living glory. You have the living glory, love. How do you get into love? At the point of soul, not through dying, not the threshold and the step threshold through death, where really death is not the stepping stone, but you get there really by seeing that soul never lived in body, was never in body. Then we do not have to resurrect ourselves. We come to the next stone of principle. Mrs. Eddy says here, "Now," cried the apostle, "is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation." Can you hear again? It's always the day of salvation, salvation, because that is a typical tone for love as soul. You know why? You can easily see that it is typical for love as soul. Salvation means that you arrive at the point of fulfillment. That's the meaning of salvation, that you arrive at the point of fulfillment, that would be love. But it means that you have not been at the point of fulfillment, or you would not need a salvation. Therefore, it indicates that there must be a transition from sense to soul, from the opposite of salvation to salvation, and that naturally is soul. It always shows us the way of transition, the way from sense to soul. So that's so interesting, you see, that practically in this tone of love as soul, she speaks always of salvation, because it's saving us from sin and the senses. How do you do that? Through soul, so that when you do it constantly and completely, you are saved, and that's the tone of love. All right. I read again. You see also the side note is present salvation. Now we must get the tone, also a little tone of principle afterwards. Again, I read 18 to get the flow. "Now," cried the apostle, is the accepted time, because now is the day of salvation." Meaning, not that now men must prepare for the future world salvation or safety. So, but that now is the time in which to experience that salvation in spirit and in life. And you see, constantly salvation, 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 or safety. So he says, now is the time for so-called material planes and material pleasures to pass away. Isn't that so? That's typically so. "For both are unreal And now you get the little sub-sub tone of principle, because impossible in science. Now she gives the reason why this is not possible, because they are not facts in principle. They are not facts of science. Therefore, to break this earthly spell, that we think that salvation is a future, mortals must get the true idea and the divine principle of all that really exists. And you see, now you get the tone of principle coming in, said, you only find your way of salvation, the way from sense to soul leading to a final salvation, if you see something about principle, namely the true idea and principle of everything that exists, and you don't have any more a sinful concept of what exists. And therefore see that principle and its idea and all that really exists and governs the universe harmoniously. So principle says, you know, you can do that transition from sense to soul, because actually sense is not the fact. It is impossible in science, because the principle only knows its idea and does not know really sin and sinful sense, does not know it. They are impossible in science. In science you cannot sin. So that's always a great point, which you see practically in every chapter then, that the moment we come to principle, it says, look here, this is a principled attitude, and in that principled attitude you begin to see that all the opposites are actually not existent. They are impossible. They are no more taken as something that has to be turned into something better, but that principle will say, that's an impossible thing. They are not possible, because they are not principles' ideas. If they are not principled ideas, they don't exist. But principle always governs the universe harmoniously. This thought is apprehended slowly. That's true. It's apprehended slowly. We still believe that there is a material universe. We still believe that there is a sinful universe, that there is a sinful man, that there is a possibility of sinning. We still believe that. That's why it's so slow. That's why we should really rely on science, because science says, look here, in science you go out from a principle. Only that which principle knows constitutes a universe. Nothing else constitutes a universe. And the principle can only know ideas of God, and that's the only universe. And everything is just impossible. Just impossible. I like that term, that it is just impossible in science. So that there is no so-called saving from an opposite until the positive is established. Just say, no, that thing is not possible. We go to the subtone of life and put in a little bit the tone of life. We see that at once. Who will stop the practice of sin? See, up to now she only spoke about sin and sinner and sinful sense. Now comes the practice of sin. Life is always the method, the practice method. Who is going to use sin? She could have said, who is going to apply sin? That's the method. So he said, who will stop the practice of sin? So long as he believes in the pleasures of sin, saying, well, as long as we believe that there is pleasures in sin, we will not stop it. We will not say, stop it, nothing doing anymore. So, in indicating that we first have to lose, really, the belief in the pleasures of sin. And that she has done in the preceding tone of principle, said, you know, they are not possible. You do something impossible if you believe that sin can give us something, that sin can give us pleasure. When mortals once admit that evil confers no pleasure, then they turn from it. The moment they admit that they are impossible, then they are willing to turn for it and no more practice it. Remove error from thought. Said, remove that sin from your thought. You remove it when you see that there is only principle and idea, and sin is therefore an impossibility, then you are ready to remove it from thought. And it will not appear in effect, it cannot be practiced. What we don't have in consciousness, that has no effect. We only experience that, what we have in consciousness. That's the great, great law of life, of showing that what we entertain in consciousness, that we experience. That is our life experience. So if we remove it from our consciousness, then we don't experience it anymore. And that's the practice. But that practice relies on the preceding tone of principle. It says, you know, you don't remove error because error is something, but you remove error because you see it is impossible. It's nothing. Then you remove it. If you feel it's something, then it's very difficult to move it. The advanced thinker and devout Christian, perceiving the scope and tendency of Christian healing and its signs, will support that. Yet again, the tone of life, they will support it. That's the practice. That's the practice to support, to remove error from thought. Another will say, go thy way for this time. When I have a convenient season, I will call for thee. That's the negative that says, not yet, it's too early, wait a little moment, I want to go on in the wrong way, and then perhaps later on I may consider the truth about it. This leads us to truth, little tone of truth. It says, divine science adjusts the balance. What is that? Adjusting the balance of soul, where there is no coming and going, appearing and disappearing. It's the balance of soul, and divine science adjusts that balance of soul as Jesus adjusted it. How does it do it? Science removes the penalty only by first removing the sin which incurs the penalty. So now she takes in truth and says, truth must really remove that penalty, remove the sin, and only then, when truth removes it, it's no more there, then there is no more penalty on it. Then the balance is restored. This is my sense of divine pardon. So divine pardon, we know, is love, and love only pardons on the basis of soul here. Namely, that first sin is destroyed. Sin, soul, destroyed, truth, or removed, that's the divine pardon. So we cannot just say love pardons, that's too general. It is true that love pardons, but we also must see what is the inner content of love's pardon. If we don't know the inner content, then we say, I can do whatever I like, I know that love will pardon me. And that's wrong, you see. Love has within itself here, the pardon of love has within itself at least soul and truth. Soul that says, you must give up sin, or else you will be penalized. How can you give up sin? By removing it through truth, and put the truth instead of sin. Can you see that? Can you see how the religious sense that just knows that love pardons is absolutely misguided? And then there is no truth, there is no scientific truth in it. If they say love pardons, it's a truth, but not a scientific truth. In order that it becomes a scientific truth, one must know the modus operandi of how and under which condition love pardons. And that is the necessary point. So that we see, yes, true love pardons, but only on the activity or on the fact that sin must first be removed. And for that you need soul with a little touch of truth in it. Huh? It's always a pinch of salt that is brought into it that makes really the meal very juicy. If the saying is true, while there is life, there is hope, its opposite is also true, while there is sin, there is doom. While there is sin, she said before, there is penalty. That must first be removed. So can you see, this again is just reiterating what she has said before. She does what everybody does who writes, and especially when one teaches. One presents the core of something, and then one has a feeling they haven't understood it quite. Then one puts it into another terminology, but the same thing in another terminology, and then afterwards in a third terminology, in a fourth symbol. But always these are only concerned with the pith of it, namely love as soul at the point of truth. Yes. So, another suffering cannot lessen our own liability. We have to remove it. Or did the martyrdom of Savonarola make the crimes of his implacable enemies less criminals? Just another way of asking the same question, really, that we have to do it ourselves, and that there is no vicarious salvation.